Welcome back to the Dogs of War podcast. It is great to have you as always. This episode is brought to you by Jarvis Landry's birthday weekend touchdown. It is also brought to you by Szabo Apparel Company. You need your Cleveland gear, you know where to go, szaboapparel.com. This episode, Raleigh and I break down our victory over the Jaguars. We then bring on Jimmy Morris, who is the host of the number one Titans podcast in the world, Home Run Throwback, to break down our upcoming game against Tennessee this Sunday. Let's get into it. Let's go.
I still believe through the cold and through the heat, through the rain and through the tears, through the crowd.
All right, now you can go.
Are you sure?
It's recording now. Like, you got to wait till I hit the button, and then you say, not start while I'm hitting the button.
Oh.
This is not being edited out either.
Oh, well, threat neutralized. Welcome back to the Dogs of War podcast. Last week, you joined us, the Dogs of War, Raleigh, Kevin. I'm Raleigh. This is Kevin.
Hello.
Well, that's Kevin, rather. Last week was the Thanksgiving special. Kevin, this week, you know what week this is?
It's a Victory Wednesday, and it's also an 8-3 week.
It's the fucking 8-3 special, baby. Let's go.
This has happened one time in my life.
Are you sure? Or what, I don't think 8-3 has been for, like, since the 70s.
Well, I think we haven't seen 8 wins since, what, 2007?
Correct. Have not seen 8 wins since 2007.
And before that, we never... What was it?
2002 we went. 9-7.
That's right. So, okay. I'm still considering it, like, the first time in, like, my real adult life.
Yeah, no, it's...
Regardless, we're celebrating, we're partying. Cheers.
We are 5 games above 500. That's insane.
It's unbelievable. And we're not going to have a losing season either.
We're not... Yeah, exactly. If we lost the remainder of our games, which... Please, God, don't let that happen. Don't even think about that. Knock on wood. Don't worry. I got so many superstitions to counteract that. We're 500.
You got it.
It's fucking sick.
Speaking of which, I can't even describe. Okay, let me back that up. I found out a lot of people I would never have guessed listened to this podcast over the weekend when they started texting me or DMing me, like, how does he do this thing with the egg? Can you explain the egg and how this started, why this started?
Oh, yeah. So for those of you that don't follow Angry Browns Me on Instagram.
It's not Angry Browns Me. It's Angry Browns Fans, by the way.
Yeah, but it's me. Basically, for the Sunday mornings, I have kind of a ritual. I am unhealthily superstitious and... One week, I don't remember which week it was, I cracked a raw egg into a beer and chugged it, kind of like they did in The Wire season 2 one time. And we won, so I kept doing it, and we won each time I've done it. The one time I skipped it, we lost to Oakland. So, you know, I attribute a lot of the victories that have occurred in the past however many weeks to that part of the ritual.
If you would have whipped out an egg at the game, because we were at the Raiders game, that would have been something incredible.
Yeah, I know. Well, I didn't have that foresight. And you're right. We would have won, and I feel bad. But
dude, I love it. I love it. I'm all for it. I could never do it. I don't know how you do it, but I'm all for it. And people were just inquiring, asking the same thing. How does he do it? But hey, we got a dub. How was your Thanksgiving, first of all?
Oh, it was magical. Spent it with Kate's family in the burbs.
Nice.
Yeah, I lot to be thankful for, Kevin.
We sure do. I was back home in Cleveland, got back Wednesday, came back to Chicago last night, Monday night. Yeah, Thanksgiving was definitely different. I think that's the same for everyone in the world this year. But Ma Dukes cooked up a fat, incredibly tasty meal. And yeah, it gets like that second or third day. Leftovers are... the day after Thanksgiving is actually almost better to me than Thanksgiving, because leftovers, we just make that big plate of just mush and everything's together. That's the best. But after like day three and four, it's like, I don't want to see any of this stuff for another year. I'm done.
Yeah. No,
it goes from both ends of the spectrum real quick.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. We have we talked about this last week, but did you have any Friendsgivings this year?
No, they all got canceled.
So we got one next week or this upcoming weekend, and we decided to leave all the leftovers at her parents, just so that we wouldn't continue eating it throughout the week. But
smart, dude,
I went for like four platefuls that night.
I had my fair share for sure.
I've been avoiding the scale like the plague, but I know it's not where I want it to be. Like my chin, there's a third one coming here, and it's coming quick.
Oh, I'm in the same boat. I ended up in the emergency room. On Friday night? Yeah, it was Friday.
Sorry, wait. Are you okay?
I'm totally fine. I'm totally fine.
You don't look informed.
I woke up. You should have seen me a few days ago. I went to bed Thursday night, and my eye was bothering me. When did I go to the... I don't remember what night it was, whatever. I think it was Friday. I went to bed Thursday night. My eye was bothering me. I wear daily contacts. I was like, all right, every once in a while, your eyes just get irritated by your contacts. I didn't think anything of it. It was a little red, scratchy. Took my contacts out, went to bed. Woke up the next morning, my left
eye. This is Thanksgiving night you went to bed?
Yes.
Okay.
So woke up the next morning. It was still really bothering me. It was my left eye, so I didn't put that contact in. Put one in. I'm walking around like a goon with one contact in. We went out. We had an igloo reservation, which is actually they're sweet. If you haven't done one yet, we need to do one here in Chicago. Had an igloo reservation around the corner. Shout out around the corner. Went there with some people, and my eye just kept getting like worse and worse and worse. I went to a tree farm before with my brother, his in-laws, my mom. I cut down the Christmas tree literally with one eye. Like I remember like sawing it down and saying, I can't see. I'm doing this by like,
we're going to get to your part of the story. Obviously it's your story. I have no idea where this is going, but you have said more things that it's taken a lot for me to not jump in and be like, what the fuck is an igloo reservation? Holy shit. You cut down a tree with an axe. Anyway, that sounds like pretty.
Yeah. Simple. So I literally couldn't see at that point in the sun, but that was before we went to the igloo. They're like the big plastic igloos that bars are buying to put outside. Like they have heaters in them and it's like eight people max. And it's like an outdoor, but indoor tent. So that was sweet. So with that, we had that reservation at like 5:30. Come like 7:30, you know, I'm a few barley pops deep. My eye is like completely swollen shut at this point. Like I can barely see out of it. So I end up going home just to watch the fights that night, the Tyson and the Jake Paul fights with my pops. And after the Tyson fight, my eye was completely swollen shut, like done. And I was like, all right, like I can't sleep like this. So he's like, all right. So we went up to the Lakewood ER and we're there. You know, at that point at midnight or one of the, whatever it was, 2 a.m, it's like residents and like nurses, you know, only.
So and shot victims.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was the only one in the ER, the only one there. They go, you know, they're running through the questions. They're like, do you smoke? I'm like, no. They're like, do you drink? And I'm like, doc, I've been drinking since 5:00. So I'm just going to apologize right now for that. They knew I was a little gassed up. They looked at my eye. They're like, we can't do shit here because you need to go see a specialist. So we set you an appointment at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning down at the Cleveland Clinic at the Cole Eye Center, which I didn't know was like the number one eye center in the country. So I, you know, cruise on down to Cleveland Clinic main campus the next morning. Doc comes in. He's younger than me, which now we're in a world, Raleigh, where doctors are now younger than us a lot of times, which is scary. Examined my eye, said it was just a bad irritation due from the contacts, gave me some drugs, and my eye's open again. That's a long, dumb story. But, yeah, you know, when you go to the ER, you hope there's a better story to tell. But I'm just going to raise my hand and say there wasn't this time.
Well, we have a lot of shitty, lame stories that wind up of us being in the ER. That happens when you're over 30. You're going to the ER stories. That's the lesson in this. When you're over 30, you go to the ER for weak sauce shit. Glad your eye's okay. It looks great now.
Thank you. I can see you again. It's open again. No explanation of what happened. They're like, we don't know. Just take these drops. So I did. Anyway, so if you're still listening, Browns beat Jacksonville 27-25 on Sunday. What do you got?
For anybody that was upset, they said, oh, wow, it's Jacksonville. Well, guess what? It was like our third string versus their third string. So we got the fucking W. Stop complaining. Let's see. Highlights, players of the game. Players of the game. Jarvis, 8 receptions, 143 yards, and his first touchdown on the year.
I actually did. It reminded me when he scored his touchdown. I was like, wait, is this his first one? And his birthday was on Saturday, so happy birthday, Jarvis. I think Dodger's birthday was that day as well. There's just a few Browns birthdays this weekend, but yeah, big day for Jarvis.
Chubb, 144 yards. Does that sound right?
It was 144. Yep.
Okay, 1 touchdown, 3 receptions for 32 yards. Studley and Baker, 258 yards, 2 touchdowns. Who do you give Kevin, the Kevin player of the game, to? The Stefanski's jawline player of the year. Excuse me. This is new. The Stefanski's jawline player of the week award goes to?
I got to give it to Jarvis because he had his best game of the year.
I'm going Baker. But
it's a toss-up.
It could go to either one of those guys.
It was Jarvis's birthday. So, okay, and you know what? All right, here we go once again with I was actually laughing out loud. I think I texted you. I was laughing out loud at one point just because, you know, Baker missed a couple, like 2 throws that maybe weren't that difficult. I never played quarterback in the league, so I don't know. But he missed some wide open throws, a couple of them. Okay. Did you see the needles he was threading to Jarvis Landry? Did you see the throws? All right, my dad made a great point after the game. I was like, Baker had those crazy throws, but people are only going to talk about those 2 stupid ones. And my dad goes, well, think of it this way. Would you rather have a quarterback that misses those 2 easy throws, which could be easily corrected in practice, and it's very easy to correct, and Baker said that after the game, or would you rather have a quarterback that could not make those long-ass bombs that he was throwing? I'm taking that all day long. His accuracy in those throws to Jarvis in the one, was it Kadarrell?
It was 30-10 on our own 38.
And these buffoons want to talk about the 2 stupid little passes. Look last night. I remember there's a few times. Now, every time I watch an NFL game, I'm calling it out. Like, to people, they don't understand why I'm doing it. But like last night, Russell Wilson threw it over the end zone or someone. I forgot. I didn't see that part of the game. And it was like, well, he's not going to ever get touched about that. It's just unbelievable, the dumb shit that they're putting out Baker. I thought he played a great game. And he said after the game, he's like, yeah, I screwed those up. Those are passes I got to make, so I'll get better at that. But again, look at those passes he was throwing to Jarvis, Kadarrell, everyone else, through like 5 sets of hands. I mean, there were so many times where it had to be within the perfect little window to not get touched or picked by that secondary's hands, and he nailed it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Well, so at the end of the day, he really gives a fuck about what the announcers think.
Yep.
We could have come to that conclusion like 5 years ago. Well, they had a lot of good points.
Not forget, the facility was closed for 2 days last week.
Yeah.
They didn't practice for 2 days, all right?
This week, we're not going to give those shitheads the time of day. Except, God damn it, now I'm mad again. I felt pretty bad for Harrison Bryant, our rookie, because he fumbled. That was on him. He looks like a kid. We were talking about how doctors are young looking compared to us, or doctors are younger than us.
He's babyface.
Most guys in the NFL at this point are younger than us. We'd still be in the league, but we'd be in the twilights of our career. He looks like a child. That fumble was caused by a fantastic play by Joe Schobert. Shout out the Schoberts, where he poked it from behind. It was sick. But they kept showing his baby face throughout that fucking game. Like, and Harrison Bryant is the reason the score is closer than it should be. That happened 17 minutes ago, Tom. And it's like, dude, you guys got to stop.
A win's a win.
I know.
At the end of the year, are we going to look back? Oh, we beat Jacksonville. Oh, but it's only by 2 points, so we should probably talk about the score. No, it's a win's a win. We are 8-3. The people that are trying to like dissect these things surgically and think that we as Browns have the gall to actually talk shit while 8-3 just blows me away. And a lot of these people, I guarantee, were not watching the 0-16 season. These people that just come jump back on when we finally get good. And now they're trying to talk all this shit. We are 8-3. That's it. That's all there is to say. We're 8-3. Stop talking.
For sure. This is dry. I got to ask you that straight up, though. They were showing him a shit ton more than they should have, Harrison Bryant, right? Did you notice that too? Or am I making that up?
No, I saw him plenty.
Like, they kept showing him again and again.
I think we don't trash players on here, but as a on the other side of the ball, as a fan base collectively, credit where due, we need to eat some crow and give our boy Sendejo.
Sendejo, he played so. I take it back. He gets the Stefanski Jawline Player of the Week award.
Maybe, yeah. So Sendejo broke up a deep end zone pass in the second quarter and then denied Mike Glennon's 2-point conversion pass at the end of the game. Yeah, it was like where have you been? Oh, it was his first breakup of the year, and it came in great timing. So we as a collective fan base are eating some crow this week. And Sendejo, yeah, credit where due.
I haven't said shit about Sendejo.
Neither have I. Well, I think maybe – oh, I don't know. Not on the podcast, but
– yeah, okay. Well, you personally, you eat crow.
Credit where due. Everyone owes him credit for that game.
Crow. Good job, Sendejo. I believed in you the entire time.
In a year of 2020 where there's not been many good things happening besides the Browns and your wedding and all this stuff, we got to give a shout out because I was pumped to see Callie Brownson become first female to ever coach a position group in NFL history. And the way that the team raves about her is awesome. Like, the players love her. Stefanski says that she's like runs the whole facility, and every time he tries to ask her to do something, it's already been done. She's in charge of all the COVID stuff, and she came in and coached the tight ends for the game because our usual tight ends coach just had a baby, so he was off for taking care of that. So shout out Callie Brownson. That is awesome. And a good stories like that, we need, especially in the year of 2020.
She's just got to teach Harrison Bryant how to hold on to that goddamn ball. No, I'm just kidding. Good job, Harrison Bryant.
She's a stud, and I was extremely happy for the organization. And yeah, I'm a big we've always been big Cali fans here, but the chief of staff taking over as a positions coach, that was awesome.
Good stuff. Should we get into this interview?
Let's do it. So tonight we're bringing on Jimmy Morris. He is the host of the number one Titans podcast, Home Run Throwback. We're going to ask what that actually means with regards to football, but we'll find that out. As always, we bring on a podcaster, the best podcaster from the opposing sideline, to break down the upcoming game, which ours is versus the Titans this Sunday. Let's get over to it. We now welcome on to the Dogs of War podcast, Jimmy Morris. Jimmy is a director of content for Broadway Sports, the editor-in-chief of Music City Miracles, which is SB Nation's Titans site, and the host of the number one Titans podcast in the world, Home Run Throwback. Mr. Morris, welcome to the Dogs of War podcast, and thank you, sir, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So you currently are in one of the top five cities that everyone up here in the Midwest wishes they lived in, correct? Nashville?
Yeah. Nashville has really grown in the last really 10 years, but even 15, 20 years since the Titans came here. It's kind of a different place than it was back then.
So are you born or raised in Tennessee? Like, what's the history of your fandom with the Titans?
Yeah, I've been here my whole life. So, when the Titans came, they came to Tennessee in 98, they played 97 in Memphis, and then 98, they played at Vanderbilt, and then 99, they opened what was then Adelphia Coliseum. And became the Titans that year. They were Tennessee Oilers the first 2 years they were here. So I was, sophomore in high school that first year. They were in Tennessee, and then my senior year was the Super Bowl run in 99.
Shout out Eddie George.
There you go.
And I know you listeners can't see we're on video here, but Jimmy is wearing a pretty sweet Derrick Henry t-shirt.
Yeah, so shout out my,
appreciate that.
My guys at Hang TN. They got some awesome stuff, but anyway.
And he's also drinking brown liquor.
Cheers. Yeah, we all got some yak going here. Hopefully I got everything, all your credentials right there. I do my best to get the homework right. But how'd you start writing a podcast about the Titans?
So I started Music City Miracles in, 2006. It's funny, the first game, I'm pretty sure the first game we were live for was the Albert Haynesworth stomp game when he stomped on the dude for the Cowboys stopped on his head in that game. And it's also Vince Young's first start. So going back kind of a ways there.
Wow.
But I just came across SB Nation, actually SB Nation Cubs blog, I'm a Cubs fan. And anyway, reached out and got going on there. So, yeah. So I've been doing this for a long time in blogger years, I feel like. But yeah, so we've been doing that for a while. And then we just started Broadway Sports Media this past summer. So kind of a deal, you know, SB Nation, like I run the MCM site, but don't have ownership of that site. So we've kind of branched off a little bit to start something that we have an ownership stake in. So anyway,
MCM is a pretty damn big site. You guys have a pretty big following on social and I mean the website in general. So obviously it's been pretty successful down there.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a good time, and it's crazy to see how much SB Nation has grown since I started in 2006. You know, it was just a blogging company, and then now it's a media thing that's, you know, I mean, it's not as big as ESPN or anything like that, but it's more of a mainstream media thing now than it was when we first started out.
We'll have all the links and all the Twitter handles in the description of this bio, as always, if people listening. Actually, I have an off-topic question, kind of. Can you talk about hockey is one of my favorite sports, maybe my favorite sport. Talk about the rise of the Predators down there. How do the...
Hockey's your favorite sport?
I've played my whole life, yeah.
You have a fucking Dayton Flyers podcast, a Cleveland Browns podcast.
We don't have a team in Cleveland. I can't root for non-Cleveland teams, so we don't have a... It's my thing. I don't root for I can't root for non-Cleveland teams. We'll talk about that later. We'll start a hockey podcast if you want. No, but Jimmy, talk about the rise of the Predators. I mean, I obviously imagine they're not equal footing in terms of the fandom there, but those Predators games are out of control. Like, how do they both rank now for the city and the fans?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Predators, I can't remember what their first year here was, but it was 95, 96, 97, sometime around in there. And we actually had a deal where some guy tried to buy the team. I can't remember what year it was, but there was a big rally here, and the Predators ended up staying. And then they got good. They went on that Stanley Cup run. And yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the NFL is bigger than everything, right? So,
of course.
There's more Titans fans in Nashville than there are Predators fans. But when that Predators run was going on, it really felt like the Predators were the biggest thing in town because the Titans were bad then and had been bad for a long time. So that was unlike, I mean, a lot of people, like you said, I've been here my whole life. A lot of people don't remember the 99 Super Bowl run. We got a little taste of it last year going to the AFC Championship game. But, you know, in 99 and 2000, the Titans were better in 2000 than they were in 99. And they lost the Ravens at home in like that's still to this day the most heartbroken I've ever been over a professional sporting event. Leaving
you got a little payback this year.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely. That was awesome. But anyway, so they were really good that year. And you know, that's all anybody here could talk about. And then we saw kind of a similar thing with the Predators. And so people that haven't been here as long as I have, sometimes I get a little bit confused, I think, on how big, like, the difference in how it is. And for some reason, there's a little bit of a rivalry between some Titans fan and Predators fan. So I think it's kind of dumb. But, you know, like I said, the NFL is the biggest thing. But, yeah, I mean, those Predators games, when you saw those shots down Broadway and it was full, I mean, it was awesome to be here for that. And then the city's really embraced it. And it, you know, for the longest time, it was we didn't have a professional sports team. So it was college style fans, you know, and so they've kind of carried that over into the hockey thing. So, I mean, it's been really cool to watch the kind of the evolution of what hockey has been in this town.
I'm sure you guys are real bored in Nashville, Tennessee without any sports teams down there. There's just nothing to do, you know?
Absolutely, but like back then, Nashville was not what it is today. So it was. I mean it's crazy because we had this thing where for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, they said on average like 100 and something people moved here a day. So I mean, it's a much different city than it was when I grew up.
No, I was kidding. Nashville is the spot. I mean,
but what I'm saying is, like, back then when we didn't have any professional sports teams, it was boring here because there was nothing going on. But it's evolved a lot in the last.
I don't even like country music.
Yeah,
but those triple decker
party buses or whatever. Yeah,
those are the coolest goddamn things I've ever been to.
There you go.
The concept of, I remember the first time someone described Nashville to me, it was, every bar is 7 floors and every floor has a different band. And yeah. I just became jealous immediately.
Well, and you saw the scene when the draft was here. I mean, it was awesome.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and I would have loved to have seen what it would have been like in Vegas this year. You know, had it not been for all the COVID stuff. But, you know, still that's the biggest gathering. I don't know how they figure that, how they count the people. But, you know, they said 600,000 people on that first night or whatever were downtown. So, yeah, it's awesome.
I forgot about that because that was when they were interviewing and putting all those people on social media that were having their bachelorette parties there that weekend.
Yeah, they were desk. They didn't know.
And they were like crying on camera and just furious. And like, we hate the NFL now because it's ruining this for me. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So as Raleigh reminded us a few minutes ago, this is a football podcast, a Cleveland Browns podcast. So what I always like to ask people that come on, what we like to ask people that come on here is, so far, you guys are 8-3, the Browns are 8-3. How has this season lived up to your preseason expectations so far? Like, would you guys come in? I mean, obviously you guys had a deep run last year. You're stacked. You got Derrick Henry. You got Tannehill. You know, was it coming in this season? Was it Super Bowl or bust? Or what was your mind at coming in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it was necessarily Super Bowl or bust, but expected to win the AFC South, expected to have a better record than last year. I mean, ended up, you know, they were 9-7 last year, but it was kind of once Tannehill took over, you know, once it was obvious that Mariota wasn't the guy and they made that transition, they were a much different team the second half of the season than they were the first half of the season. So expected them to improve on that somewhat. And so, you know, they're starting to do that. They had a little bit of a lull there. Because they were 6-0 and then lost to the Steelers, lost to the Bengals in, you know, back-to-back weeks. And then won a game and then lost to the Colts pretty embarrassingly on Thursday night. And the Colts have been the Titans' nemesis for a long time. You know, they never beat Andrew Luck. So it was, you know, like a huge celebration here that Saturday night that he announced that he was retiring. I mean, I still remember where I was, what I was doing when I heard
it. Because,
I
thought it was a joke.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I tell the story all the time, but so, you know, Titans play the Colts twice a year. And I have a 12-year-old son, and 2 years ago, so before the Jacoby Brissett year, which I guess was, 2 years ago now, were Alabama fans also. And my tenure, he was 10 at the time. He had seen more Alabama national championships than he had Titans wins over the Colts. It's just insane. Like, the Titans just never beat them. And so that was kind of the thing. And so then, you know, they also have had trouble with Phillip Rivers throughout the years. Have a, you know, just kind of a meltdown few minutes in that game where you have a 17-yard punt and then a blocked punt and the wheels kind of come off. So they lose that game. And so then you're sitting there at 6-3. And you're at that point, they were, you know, they flashed the playoff graphic, on Sunday Night Football, and the Titans are on the outside looking in because the Browns were 6-3 and the Raiders were 6-3 and somebody else. And so then it's like, well, crap, now you've got to go to Baltimore and you've got to go to Indianapolis. And you're sitting at 6-3 outside looking in. And so it was kind of a, you know, a little bit of a panic time. And then they were able to go to Baltimore and win. And then obviously won pretty convincingly against the Colts on Sunday. So now kind of back in the spot that we thought they would be in. I mean, I didn't think they were going to, you know, run the table or anything like that. But I thought in this division, the Titans are I thought coming into the season, they were clearly the best team. The Colts have been better than I expected them to be. Phillip Rivers has been a little bit better than what I thought he would be. So, I mean, I think that's a little bit closer now, but I do still think the Titans are the best team in the division. So now kind of back in the spot that I kind of thought they would be in. I mean, I would have, if you would have told me before the 3-game stretch that they were going to lose the first one to the Colts and then win, you know, in Baltimore and in Indianapolis, I would have, you know, called you crazy. But they were able to do that. And this team has a knack for losing games they should win and then kind of in that everybody counts them out type deal. I mean, I don't know if you remember back to, I guess it was week 4, when the Titans, you know, were the first team to have the COVID problems, had to play the Bills on Tuesday night. The Bills at that point were, you know, the 3-0, Josh Allen was the league MVP. I mean, you know, all that stuff was going on. Titans didn't get to practice for 2 weeks, and they come out and just put it on the Bills, you know, and nobody would have expected that. So, you know, they Mike Vrabel has a good way of, you know, kind of when everybody's counting them out, he, you know, is able to circle the wagons and get them fired up for those games.
Segway.
So they've done that the last couple of games, but that's where I'm a little bit worried because now, you know, the Titans are back in control of the AFC South. Now you've got a game at home against the Browns, who are good, but, you know, Titans are favored in the game and all that kind of stuff. These are the kind of games the Titans typically will have trouble with.
So I say segue because you just set it up with a perfect segue because my next question is about Mike Vrabel, so props to you. Ohio in general, big big Vrabel people. Right. You know, played for Ohio State. The love hate, the hate part comes because he played for the Patriots, and of course sure. Now we're playing against him on Sunday. But overall, we're Vrabel people. So talk to us about, you know, when he came in as a coach. I don't know what it was like down in Titans territory, but people were wondering, like, all right, you know, a Belichick disciple, like, he's ever been had, like, how's he going to do? But clearly, he's a stud, and some of the things he's done with, with the timeout or whatever he did a few games ago. He's a damn good coach. And did that blow you guys away, or was that a surprise at all?
So he's been really good, obviously. You know, the thing that you heard when they hired him was, you know, the whole leader of men thing. Like, that's what John Robinson, Titans GM, was looking for. And that was the thing with Vrabel, because, you know, the resume as far as like coaching, you know, as far as, he was a coordinator in Houston for 1 year, and they were terrible. Now, the defense was. They had injuries. I mean, J.J. Watt was hurt that year. Whitney Merciless was hurt that year. I mean, so there were some things there, but, you know, his 1 year as a coordinator wasn't good. But he's obviously a good leader. He knows the game. He is the – if you – and so people talk about him being from the Belichick tree. He's not technically from the Belichick tree because he's never coached for Belichick. He played for him for a long time, obviously.
True.
But didn't coach under him. But he has that the knowledge of the game. He has the same approach with the media a lot of times with injuries and that kind of stuff. Like, he's not giving us anything when it comes to that kind of stuff. But, you know, he's done a couple of things. Like, you mentioned the timeout. It was actually they took a too many men on the field penalty.
That's right, the penalty.
To stop the clock. And so that way they didn't have to use a timeout anyway. You know, so he did that. He did the thing last year in the playoff game in New England, where they took basically a delay of a false start and then a delay of game. So basically got to let the clock run for an extra 45 seconds.
Against
Belichick. And yes. You know, Belichick's in there on the sideline. He's pissed. He's, you know, going nuts. He had done that earlier in the year. Belichick had. And that's actually the second half. Vrabel's on the too many men on the field thing.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, obviously he has a really good knowledge of the game. He is, very, like I said, very good at motivation and all those types of things. They've had some issues early on. His in-game decisions are, other than that kind of stuff, are kind of, I don't know, suspect at times. He's gotten better since he started, and I think we were probably too hard on him in the beginning when he was a new head coach. But overall, I mean, you have to be thrilled with what he's done. This year, the Titans don't have a defensive coordinator. Dean Pease retired after last year, and Vrabel and Shane Bowen, who's the outside linebackers coach, and Bowen's actually the one that calls the plays. But I mean, this is Vrabel's defense. The defense has struggled. So there's been some talk about they probably need to get a defensive coordinator, because that's not necessarily his – it's just not what he's best at. So there's some of that kind of stuff. He does have a big ego and that kind of stuff, but he has been a very good coach, and, you know, his record is what it is. He's been very – you know, they had made a deep run last year. So overall, I mean, we're obviously very thrilled to have him.
It's always surprising to me when you see someone like Vrabel, who's an absolute stud linebacker, come in and, like you just said, struggle on defense, like not really be able to put together maybe the best game plan out there. So that's always just interesting to me.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it's been they've had injuries too. So I mean, it's hard to really say what is that, because for a lot of the year they didn't have a pass rush. They've kind of pieced it together, and it's gotten better in the last couple of weeks. The secondary has been banged up, and they've lucked into a corner in Breon Borders, who's been really good, an undrafted guy the last couple of weeks, but struggling with Jonathan Joseph and those types of guys earlier in the year. But there's also like times, because if you go back and watch the Steelers game against the Titans in the first Colts game, like, Ben Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers, very similar quarterbacks at this point in their career, where they want to catch the ball and get rid of it. Like, you know, Ben used to hang on to the ball forever and all that stuff. He doesn't really want to do that anymore, it doesn't seem like. And so both of those games, I mean, they're playing these soft coverages. And, I mean, I understand not wanting to go with the big play, but, I mean, they're just dink and dunk all the way down the field. And, you know, I'm not sure how a 15-play drive for a touchdown is that much better than a 2-play drive for a touchdown, you know. And so last year they were really good at, like, their defense kind of struggled between the 20s, but they were really good in the red zone. This year they haven't been good anywhere, and they've been terrible on third down. So that's really hurt them. Now they've been better the last couple of weeks, They were able to get some pressure on Phil Rivers in this last game, where they didn't get any on him in the first game. And so when Rivers starts to feel pressure, you know, he starts to struggle and see ghosts and all that kind of stuff. So they were able to affect him in that way in this last game, which they weren't able to do in the first game. So hopefully they can translate that going forward. But there's just been some of that kind of stuff, and then some of the personnel decisions. They've had a terrible time with kickers and punters, and I mean, just for whatever reason, they can't evaluate special teams guys. So I mean, you know, Gostkowski's been up and down this year, and obviously, I mean, he's been, you know, he's a Hall of Fame kicker, but at this point, he's struggled a little bit. Now he's on one of his runs now where he's kicking well, so hopefully that'll stay. But Brett Kern, who is like the best punter in the world, he got hurt on a bad snap a couple weeks ago, and they were bringing punters in and out, and it was just a whole thing. So some of that stuff they've had some trouble with. But like I said, overall, I mean, you got to be happy with what Vrabel's done.
Jimmy, where do you see yourself matching up well with the Browns? Matchups you're looking forward to see, and which matchups are you dreading, if any?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that – so defensively, the Titans are – better against they stack up better against a team that runs the ball really well and that is not as strong of a passing game. Okay, so I think from that standpoint, I mean, I'm not going to say that the Browns aren't going to be able to run on the Titans, because I think they are, and the Titans are not great against the run. But if you give me if you ask me if I want like a passing attack that can attack you like the Steelers did a few weeks ago, or a rushing attack like the Browns have, I would rather play against the rushing attack game. So I mean, I think that they'll be better suited to stop this Browns offense than they are some other teams. Like I said, the biggest problem has been third down. I mean, I haven't looked at it since the games on Sunday, but before that, the Titans had the worst third down defense in the history of football, like literally. And it wasn't even like, you know, we're not talking about like third and three, third and two, I mean, they were giving up third and 12, third and seven, third and 15. I mean, it was like whenever it was third down, it was a disaster. So they've shored that up a little bit. They've been better on first and second down too. So that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think that'll be good. What I worry about is the Browns' pass rush, because the Titans are down to their third left tackle. Taylor Lewan, you know, who's a Pro Bowl guy, tore his ACL. He's been out. And then the guy, Tyson Brelo, that came in for him, he got an ankle injury 2 weeks ago. He's out for the year. So now you're down to the third guy, Dan Quisenberry, who's played well. I mean, he played well on Sunday, but still, he's a third-string guy for a reason. So you worry a little bit about that. They've had some other injuries on the offensive line. Those guys have gotten healthier. Ryder Saffold, the left guard, had been banged up, but he played pretty well on Sunday. I think he's back to being healthy. The center, Ben Jones, has been banged up. He seems to be better. Dennis Kelly, who's playing right tackle, had been banged up as well. And he's not great, but he's kind of just a serviceable guy. So that's kind of the thing that you worry about, is can they protect Ryan Tannehill? Now, you know, if Derrick Henry can go for 140 and three touchdowns in the first half, it doesn't matter. But that's not going to happen every week. So I'm a little bit nervous about how they're going to hold up against a good pass rush.
So you sold that well, but you guys had your two quarterbacks go down earlier in the year, but now Malcolm Butler and Breon Borders are currently ranked in the top five for all corners in the NFL, with Breon being number one. So that's something that, you know, when the Browns lose players, we don't have the replacements come in and be the top in the league. So is that a big surprise for you guys? What's that like?
Yeah, well, so, yeah, okay, so the Titans, you know, they felt good about their corner group coming in, because you've got Malcolm Butler, who is what he is, right? I mean, he's streaky. There are times where he's going to look terrible, and there are times where he looks like, you know, one of the best guys in the league. And he's been that guy throughout his career. They have a Dory Jackson, who, you know, is in his fourth year, really came on the end of the year last year. They were expecting big things out of him, but he started the season with a knee injury. Then they put him on IR. They brought him, they moved him to the, you know, designated to return list before the Steelers game. And then he practiced that week, and then they didn't activate him that week. And then he practiced on Monday the next week, and then we didn't see him again. And so Vrabel doesn't give us anything on injuries. So they wouldn't say he had a setback. The only thing he would say was, whatever is going on with him is not going to keep him out for the year. So they've activated him, but he's been inactive. They've activated him to the roster, but he's been inactive for three games now: the first Colts game, the Ravens game, the second Colts game. So I don't know what his status is. He hasn't practiced, so I don't know if he'll be ready to go this week or not. They had Jonathan Joseph out there, who was absolutely terrible, so they cut him. Breon Borders was a guy that was just kind of buried on the depth chart. They brought him in training camp. He was pretty good, kept him around, called him up from the practice squad, and he's been serviceable. He's been good. So that's obviously, you know, been a good find for them, because if you look at what the Titans did this offseason, for as much as we like John Robinson as our GM, and he's really good, this offseason was a disaster. They needed to improve the pass rush. They signed Vic Beasley. Vic Beasley didn't show up for 10 days for no reason at camp, got fined like $500,000, and then basically just didn't try. And so finally they just cut him, because it was like, well, we gave you $9.5 million. You know, thanks for coming in, but if you're not going to try, we don't want to keep you around here. Then, you know, they signed Clowney. The whole Clowney thing went on for, it seemed like, 3 years. Yep. They signed Clowney. The three of us combined have as many sacks as he does on the year. He's on IR with a knee injury. But listen, I mean, this is a low bar, but he at least tried. It felt like, whereas Beasley wasn't even trying. But, you know, they weren't getting what they needed out of him.
Wait, that's the most Browns thing you could ever say. He at least tried.
Yeah, I mean, no, serious, though. Like, Vic Beasley literally...
That's our line. Don't take that from us.
They literally, I mean, he didn't try, so they cut him. Like, because you can't have that guy in your locker room. But anyway, so that's your... Those are your two big-ticket free agent guys in the offseason. And so, again, you know, between the two of them, you paid them $20.5 million, and they have zero sacks. And one of them's not on the roster, the other one's on IR. Okay, whatever. So now you get to the draft, right? Isaiah Wilson, first-round pick, right tackle. He comes in, goes to a party at Tennessee State University, which is in Nashville, gets on the COVID list, comes back, then he gets a DUI for doing donuts downtown in the middle of the night, you know. And so then they put him back on the COVID list. I don't really think that they were supposed to do that. They've been on the COVID list for like 3 weeks. I mean, it's unbelievable. So he hadn't even been active for a game until this past – or no, the first game he was active for was the Ravens game. And that was only because they were down so many offensive linemen. I mean, it wasn't – they don't want him in the game. But they had to have him active, and they needed bodies. And so he's now played, I think he played three snaps in Indianapolis. One of them was on field or an extra point team where he got knocked on his butt. And then he was in for the two kneel downs at the end of the Colts game. So that's what you've gotten from your first round pick. He was him and Jordan Love, you know, the Packers quarterback, were the only two first round picks that hadn't taken a snap yet. So, you know, he beat him. So good job. Christian Fulton was their second round pick, corner out of LSU, who, I mean, we still think is going to be good, but he's just been injured, hasn't been able to play. Darrington Evans is a running back, Appalachian State, third round guy, you know, kind of a compliment to Derrick Henry, receiving, all that kind of stuff. He's been hurt. So, I mean, they've gotten nothing from anything they did this offseason. So really, for them to be where they are with that kind of stuff is pretty remarkable. It's a testament to the roster John Robinson had built before those guys, and then, you know, what the players that are here, the coaching staff, all that have been able to do. So, you know, I mean, it's been wild from that standpoint, but, I mean, they're 8-3, so that's good, right?
I think every LSU player that was drafted in the last 2 years is currently hurt.
Yeah.
We have Greedy's been out. We're missing some LSU boys ourselves. So now that you say that, and with Joe out too, there's a lot of LSU boys hurt right now. It's unfortunate. I want to ask about two previous games before we get into our predictions here, and we'll let you get back to your normal life eventually, we promise. My first question, Raleigh will take a game that happened in 2015. I want to ask about the game, the season opener last year, which I was at.
Those massacres.
I still have, you know what, I hate to show a weakness here, but I'm going to. I still have PTSD, because where I was sitting on the 50-yard line just watching this 7'3", 300-pound blur that is Derrick Henry take that, like, 90-yard shot down. It's him just, like, zooming by, and I was like, oh, we're in some trouble here.
Yeah, actually, you go first. I'll go second. My story's sick.
My question... Yes, as I just said.
Okay,
my question is, Dean, this is cool for either of you two. Do you think we can top the amount of flags that were thrown that game this Sunday?
No, I mean, the good thing is they're not calling.
When we set the record, the NFL record for most flags in a football game.
Yeah, yeah. Because then some of the Browns got kicked out of that game, right?
It was a shot to the head with
Yeah.
Is it the weed guy?
We had a lot of issues.
They don't call holding anymore. So hopefully we won't see that again.
We had 18 penalties or so. It was absurd. Absolutely absurd.
That game, like I talked about earlier, was the perfect example of a game that Mike Vrabel can get his team up for. Because, I mean, I'm sure y'all remember, like, the Browns were Super Bowl champions last year before the season started, right? And so that's all anybody wanted to talk about was the Browns. And listen, I mean, I got a special place in my heart for Freddie Kitchens. Like I said, I'm an Alabama fan, even though he was terrible as a quarterback at Alabama. But
Bourbon Bowl. He won a Bourbon Bowl or two, didn't he? Or not yeah. Bourbon Bowl. I'm thinking of the movie.
The Iron Bowl.
I'm thinking of Happy Water Boy, sorry.
But like I said, that was a perfect variable game where, you know, everybody was on the Browns. The Browns are awesome. They're going to Super Bowl, all that stuff, you know, and the Titans just go in there and whoop them. And listen, I mean, y'all got to see one of the few Marcus Mariota good games in the last couple of years that he was here. So, I mean, I guess you got that to be thankful for.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wait, before Raleigh jumps in, you brought up a point that I think we made this on the podcast last year, was that we said, if there's any coach in the world who's going to just be pissed off and have bulletin board material about this, you know, Browns are a playoff team, and it's going to be Vrabel. He's going to get these guys up to come play that game. And it's exactly what he did.
Absolutely. And it's like I said, that Bills game earlier this year where, you know, everybody hated the Titans because, you know, the Titans, they got, you know, they got COVID and then they got together and had a workout after they weren't supposed to. And, you know, people were writing pieces about how they should kick them out of the league and all that stuff. And like I said, Josh Allen's the greatest quarterback in the world and all that stuff. I mean, listen, I didn't have a good feeling about that game going in. But then, like, afterwards, thinking back on it, I'm like, I should have known because, you know, we got kind of their thing after the game that a bunch of players were saying, and, you know, that's what they were preaching all week. And so, again, same deal there when, you know, like I said, anytime he can, Vrabel can find something like that to rally the team on, he's going to do it.
I mean, that's all you can ask for, really, as a head coach. Like,
yeah,
he's sick of doing that and then just hire the other guys to run the defense and the offense.
Yeah. There you go.
So, a historical Browns reference in 2015, the Cleveland Browns recorded the greatest road comeback in NFL history against the Titans. I was at that game. It was on the annual guys trip for dudes. Down 28-3. I kind of led that up like with the reverse suspense it should have had by telling it was the greatest road comeback in NFL history already. Do you recall that game? And is that a dark spot in your history as much as it is a highlight in my history?
Hold on. That wasn't the 2015 game. The Browns won 28-14.
No. When we were getting our asses kicked.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to find.
It was 28-29.
So I think it was the greatest comeback, road comeback.
In regular season.
Jimmy, you got to understand, man. Like, up until the last couple years, we didn't have many wins ever. So, like, this one will always be on the refrigerator for us.
No, I get you. I'm just I remember that game because, I mean, those kind of things stick out in your mind. And it was – I mean, listen, that was during a point where the Titans were terrible. I mean, the Titans, you know, I mean, obviously everybody likes to back
on this for me. Don't you dilute this for
me. No, I mean, I'm just saying everybody likes to back on the Browns, right, for all the different stuff. And you've seen the quarterbacks and all that stuff, but like the Titans went through a period where they didn't get to the playoffs from 2008 until I guess 2018. They had a 10-year playoff drought, didn't win a playoff game for like 15 years. So I mean it was kind of a deal. And so
you know what team's podcast you're on right now.
I understand. So, I'll keep you in my prayers, Jimmy.
Yeah, I understand. Anyway, all that to say, you understand that like there are things that happen and you're like, well, I mean that's about right, you know. Like you don't even you get mad kind of while it's like starting to happen, and then by the time it gets to where you know what's about to happen, you just kind of accept it. You know, it's like, let me just sit here and take it.
Okay, I was gonna say this to Kevin before the episode. We always say it sounds like we're talking to the exact same fan base but we've said that like five fucking interviews in a row. And I'm like, we got to stop saying that because it's diluting every time we say that. But what you just described there, that's so spot on where you're like, yeah, no, that would happen. Why wouldn't that happen? I know exactly what you're saying.
100%. So before we jump into predictions, and like I said, 20 minutes ago, we'll let Jimmy get back to his life. We were remiss not to bring up the true heavyweight matchup this Sunday is Chubb versus the guy on your t-shirt, Derrick Henry. Talk to us about Derrick Henry, and I mean, there's not much you have to say. He's just an MVP candidate, and he's an absolute freak of nature. Someone that big should not be able to run that fast.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, the big debate in the league right now, and especially around here over this past offseason, was whether or not you can pay running backs, right? And listen, we can go through the list of guys that have gotten big contracts that have sucked. I mean, the Titans paid Chris Johnson after he had 2,000 yards, and then he laid down and like it was over. And so, I mean, you know, you can look around at guys around the league right now. You got your Todd Gurley's, David Johnson. I mean, we can go through the list of guys that have huge Ezekiel Elliott even, that have huge contracts that it's not working out for them or their team. I don't think it's always necessarily their fault. But so that was kind of the big thing around here was, what do you do with Derrick Henry? Because initially they gave him the franchise tag. And then it was like, okay, well, how does this play out? Because I think they knew at the end of the year last year, especially when you saw what he was able to do in the first two playoff games, that didn't go as well in Kansas City, but you know, he ran over the Patriots, he ran over the Ravens. And he had been doing that for the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season as well. So they knew that they had something special. They started to, I guess, kind of, you know, zig when the rest of the league was zagging. Hey, everybody's going light, spread it out, throw the ball around the yard. We're going to go heavy, and we're going to run it down your throats, right? So they knew that they had something special, and Ryan Tannehill was good. He's good in the confines of this offense with Derrick Henry. I mean, I think all those things are certainly true. So the prevailing thought was you franchise him for 2020, you franchise him for 2021, and then you kind of see where it is after that. So basically, you know, you're paying him $10.5 million was what he would have played under the franchise tag for this year. Then, you know, it increases a certain percentage if you franchise him for a second year in a row. And so that was kind of what we were expecting that it was going to happen as we got toward the, you know, the deadline for reaching a long-term deal. And then right at the very end, they were able to basically put a deal together that guaranteed him a little bit more money than what he would have gotten on those two franchise tags, but gives the Titans a pretty good out after next year. So, I mean, it was a really well-done deal. I think Derrick Henry is different. Like you said, I mean, you don't expect somebody that big to be able to run that fast. And I mean, being out of training camp and seeing him, I mean, he looks like a linebacker. He doesn't look like a running back. And you see these videos of him, you know, that he posts on Instagram where he's, you know, deadlifting all this weight and he's running up sand dunes and throwing mess. I mean, you know, there's all this ridiculous stuff that he does. And so I just think he's different. There are outliers. I think we all should be able to, you know, accept that. And so, I mean, I think he's that guy. You know, he has not shown the concern was after how many carries he got last year that, you know, you're going to see a drop off in production this year. And you've seen it from a lot of guys. I mean, it's not like it's a thing that's made up. I mean, time and time again, you've seen guys get that many carries in, they just drop off. Their bodies can't take it after that. That's different. I mean, you know, he's built like a transformer. And so, it's so much fun. It's so much fun to watch him. It's so much fun to watch how he's grown into, you know, he was a guy when he first got here, he was behind DeMarco Murray. And listen, there was a point, 3 years ago where David Flewellen, who you've probably never heard of, was getting carries ahead of Derrick Henry in a game because they were just so frustrated with his lack of he was just trying to bounce everything, basically, you know, trying to run like a little guy instead of like, hey, get downhill. Then once you get past the line, you can make your moves. You can stiff arm guys and run away from people.
Bully ball. Yep.
So, yeah. And so he has a, you know, if you live around here, it's like this, you know, famed conversation that he has with Eddie George. And Eddie George basically tells him, hey, you're really big. Run over people, you know? And Derrick, it's so silly to think that this is actually how it went down. But then Derrick Henry's like, you know what? I am big. I will run over people. And so then after that, I mean, like ever since then, he's been a different guy. And I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, the opposing teams should be terrified if they have the Titans backed up inside their 10, because I feel like he has more touchdown runs of 90 plus than he does of 9 or less. I mean, because it's just like everybody comes and they stack the box, and if he gets that crease, he's gone. You can't catch him. And then if guys are running up next to him, he just, you know, throws them off of him. I'm sure you've seen the clip of Josh Norman where he, you know, just basically threw him to the sideline. So, I mean, he's able to do that against.
Oh, yeah.
The greatest greatest wasn't with what's his fuck against the Ravens.
Oh, yeah, Earl Thomas, where he turned him into Earl Thomas talked crap throughout the week. Like, well, we see what he did against Patriots. He's not going to do that against us. And then, you know. But anyway, so, I mean, listen, it's fun to watch him. It's fun to, and you know, we all want our, like, we want our players to really, like, love the game. And care about it. And, you know, like these guys, that some of them just play because they make a bunch of money. Some of them do play because they love it. Derrick Henry loves football. Like, he just wants to play football. He wants to go out there and he wants to run over people. And so it's fun to have this dude who loves the game, who wants to be here, wants to be a part of this franchise, and to have him be able to have the success that he's had is awesome. And, you know, they've been able to build around him. They've been able to tailor an offense that works with his skill set, with Ryan Tannehill's skill set, you know, and it's just been awesome to watch. And he just continues to do amazing things every week. And like I said, it's fun to have that guy on your team.
Derrick Henry and Chubb are the two best running backs in the National Football League. I will not hear anything about any of the other gentlemen with nose piercings or bull rings. It's these two guys are the best running backs in football. Yes, we are both. And Kareem, yeah. We are very biased to fan bases right here, but it is what it is. I'm excited for the heavyweight matchup there. So let's do it. Let's get into the predictions for Sunday. Raleigh, you want to go first or Jimmy?
You know I go last.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is the game right here where, as Titans fans, we're all a little bit afraid of, because, like I said earlier, it just seems like whenever they start to, you know, read their own press clippings or whatever, this is kind of where they have a letdown. I think this group is different. I do think the Titans are the better team. I think it's close, but I think the Titans are the better team. So, I mean, I think it's probably one of those games that's close for three quarters, but then Derrick Henry starts to, you know, impose his will in the fourth quarter, and so the Titans win something, I don't know, 31-24, something in that neighborhood.
That was close. I was going to go, I'm saying Browns 31-27 because I can't go against my boys, but I agree wholeheartedly. It's going to be just back and forth, like just a heavyweight matchup. Wait, one more thing before Raleigh gets in, and then we close things up here. What's up with you guys going to the other team's logo in the middle of the field and jaw on the sidelines and trying to start a fight before the game even starts? Are we going to do this till, like, you lose doing that? Or, like, wait, what's going on here?
Well, it's not like – so they do it every game, and it's not like they haven't lost.
The thing against – so we're not big Ravens fans, of course. So yeah, when right. The thing with Harbaugh last week was awesome. Laugh out loud hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, Vrabel talked about it after the game and then a little bit, you know, during the week last week. It's not a – they don't mean disrespect by it. That's just they get introduced to the team. They run out. That's what they do. I don't know. Vrabel loves it. I mean, you saw him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then after, you know, he's like chasing John Harbaugh down to shake his hand after the game. Harbaugh waves him off. Vrabel still goes over to him. It's awesome. But anyway, yeah, I don't know.
Wait, was the coach years ago that yelled at the other coach for shaking his hand too hard?
Oh, yeah. What did,
was that one of the Harbaughs?
It was Jim Harbaugh, right? Yes. That it was like Harbaugh Jim Schwartz or something? I feel like that's what it was.
I think so. Yeah.
The emasculating firm handshake of destiny. That's good stuff. Browns 43, Titans 17. Let's go.
I like it.
Well, I just hope neither of our teams can take any more injuries. Just hope for a good clean game, gentlemen. A good fun game. But Jimmy, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate it. Again, we're gonna have all Jimmy's contact info, his sites, his podcast, and episode description. But best of luck on Sunday, and thanks again.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was awesome.
Once again, thank you, Jimmy, for joining us this evening to break down the Titans game this Sunday. Oh, we actually asked him off camera what the name of the podcast means. Home Run Throwback is actually what was later referred to as Music City Miracle, the famous play. Look it up if you haven't. That does it for Raleigh and I for this week. We'll see you next week. Good night, Cleveland.
Used to spend my nights out in barroom. Liquor was the only love I'd known. But you rescued me from reaching for the bottom and brought me back. Yeah. Gone. You're as smooth as Tennessee whiskey. Yeah.